Thank you so much for joining Living Black Radio. First of all, must congratulate you not only on being the first First Nations man to become a frontbencher in federal government, but now the first Indigenous federal minister for aged care and Indigenous health. Can I ask about how your role will be supported by the federal minister for Indigenous affairs? I mean, well, how will these portfolios be managed?
There's a number of avenues. One is just face-to-face contact and joint planning and working together on key initiatives. The other is through the Cabinet Subcommittee, because I've been appointed to the Cabinet Subcommittee that focuses on Indigenous matters. And so I now have the incredible opportunity of contributing there and going in as a minister now. The interaction between myself, Minister Greg Hunt, who has responsibility for health overall, and then other colleagues, David Gillespie with Rural Health, means that we can collectively do things together that will make a difference, not only for Indigenous Australians, but for people over 60 or Australians who are ageing and need aged care.
Well, Ken, what are the challenges that you see for aged care, particularly with the change in the economy and shift in assets testing for aged pensioners and care for all elders?
Look, I think one of the... certainly financial considerations are always important in accessing services and providing them. But I think the other one too is the diversity of our country geographically, the remote, rural, regional, and towns that are small. You can't provide aged care services, but you can provide other opportunities that takes care of people ageing. And one of them is by ageing in the home and having support services around you. For Aboriginal health, I think our elderly and our elders are a significant concern given the complex chronic health conditions that they often experience. And combining the best of the healthcare system with the best of what we can do in ageing is my ultimate aim. Mm. But I also realise that resources in both these areas are often stretched, so it's a challenge.
So Indigenous health is such a large portfolio and very commendable that now that there'll be more attention to detail that it obviously needs. I guess the first question regarding that is, can you talk about the key areas that you'll focus on with Indigenous health? You've mentioned aged care, but what else will you be looking at and working on?
I think an area that we often forget about is youth. And it's an area that I want to focus on because if I go to the front end of life, the 0 to 8-year-olds, we've got a number of programs that are already in place. We've seen state and territories doing some superb work in the early years, the first 1,000 days. And if we think about the next step, often it's the area that is least in our minds, and that is the area of youth health. And that's where we've got our major challenges in terms of social and emotional issues that are faced by young people, substance abuse or the early entree into substance abuse, particularly drugs, but also suicides. So it's a area that I do want to turn people's attention to within the agency, but also the cross-portfolio work to address the social determinants. And I established a working party led by Bobby Campbell within OATSI to look at what it is that we now need to do across a number of agencies to tackle the underlying issues that impact on the health of our people.
Well, I wanted to actually talk to you more about that. I mean, when you're talking about youth suicide, there has been, you know, discussion over the last couple of years and a call to emergency regarding issues around suicide and self-harm. And there was, I think, even a call about a national task force. Will that be something that will be developed in that time?
I'll be working with Minister Hunt on the issue of suicide broadly, but attended with Minister Lee the Kimberley Forum on Suicide. And it was interesting listening to, and she found it very interesting listening to the voices of people from within the community, people who were members of the community, particularly the mothers who had lost a son or daughter, and said to Minister Lee, a lot of the money you spend is spent into organisations. And one mother talked about an example of where she sought help frequently, but the organisation hadn't got back to her. And so that created a set of circumstances that resulted in the loss of her child. And she was angry at the fact that it had taken so long to engage and have a real discussion at the grassroots level. So part of that will continue as a commitment from me, but I don't want to focus just on the Kimberley, because I want to focus on an area that's often forgotten, that is urban populations. We talk about Aboriginal health and we know where the community controlled health services are, but there are many gaps, and I'm going to have to focus on the gaps of connection. And I suppose my other priority really is, along with the whole gamut of Aboriginal health, is better access to primary health care, better access to GPs, in order to make sure that problems are dealt with early so they don't become problematic and complex.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Kirsten Lindsay and I'm in conversation with the Federal Minister for Aged Care and Indigenous Health, Ken Wyatt. When talking about gaps, I'm looking at the closing the gap targets, and I'm of the understanding that mental health and even alcohol and other drug services aren't included in the closing the gap targets. Will there be a further push for that? It seems like a lot of people feel like their cries of help are falling on deaf ears.
I think the focus on closing the gap was set in a way that we could have achievable outcomes over a period of time. And it didn't preclude or prevent either OATSI or the health agencies and the health systems from looking at all other issues and making them priorities within their program areas. I know when I worked in New South Wales, mental health was a significant issue, and we did a lot of work in concert with the Aboriginal communities of New South Wales around how we would tackle some of the mental health issues, and that included domestic violence. So there was a lot of work done and commitment of people and resources to tackle some of the issues. And we did that the best we could within the funding we had. But I think there is still further discussion that I will lead in highlighting areas where I believe that we're going to have to expend some time and energy on addressing, in a sense, a holistic approach to challenges that we face within our community on both health, physical health, emotional and social, and then those other elements that impact.
So when you look at all that, we're looking at also the issues around incarceration and how that, you know, the health and well-being of communities leads to incarceration, and also the impacts of incarceration to health and well-being.
I will be looking at that because I've already started to look at aged care and people ageing within prisons. It's not a discussion that is often had, and I asked a series of questions recently about prison populations, the prevalence rates of illnesses. But my emphasis then was on older Australians within the prison system, of which some of our people are there. But more importantly, coming back to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, I am very keen now to get a better understanding of the challenges that have emerged since I was involved with New South Wales Justice Health. Because I think with the impact of social change, the impact of drugs and new drugs that are now particularly ICE, I'm now interested to see where the challenges are that we need to address. And that means also continuity of care. So when you leave prison, you've got some connection either to an AMS or a health service that's going to look after you. And I think that's an important step to looking at how we close the gap.
SBS Radio, independent, informed, in touch.
When you look at all the issues around health and well-being, and I mean, you've obviously heard it, there's a, say, the signatories from the Redfern statement have all been looking at and working towards trying to work a lot more closely within Cabinet around these issues. Is that something that you can see for the future, that there will be that further consultation and working more closely with leaders who have already done the hard work to look at the solutions and to look at the pathways now?
No, that's a definite given. I've always operated on the basis of working very closely with not only leadership, but with community. That's an important journey that we take. And the Redfern Statement's a great base from which to continue to build achievements. Because we mustn't forget that we do have jewels in the crown where there are communities and there are programs that are achieving incredible results. So it's building on those successes, combining it with the vision of those involved, the Redfern statement, but then getting mainstream health to also play its significant part in partnership with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and their communities. I think that's the critical step that we've got to take. And we should also pick just three or four goals that we've got to focus on collectively, but a whole range of things that come back to family and how do we better access healthcare for families, because it is the family that is the strength of our communities.
I do wish you the best of luck. I wanted to just ask you, because the state of people's well-being also comes back to some of the challenges, you know, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people face regarding the issues around treaty and constitutional recognition. Now, previously you've pushed for your support for constitutional recognition, but you also have opened the discussion around the treaty process. Do you think it's important for your portfolio when it comes to the consideration of well-being for elders and families?
What I've seen historically, and I want to go back to a comment that we touched on very briefly, and that is we know all of the reports that have ever been written. We know the fights that we've had to take over the last four decades for change and improvement. And that collective knowledge is part of how we start to move forward in self-determining those areas that we can work with others in partnership to achieve gains. Now, in terms of constitutional recognition, I'm a strong supporter of constitutional recognition on the basis that the Constitution is the foundation for which our High Courts used, or our High Court, I should say, uses to make judgments in which they find either for or against somebody taking a case to the High Court. My only concern is with treaties, and I, having done comparative work with other nations, First Nations people in, say, Canada, the United States, New Zealand, I see that they have treaties, that there are elements of those treaties that they've been able to enforce. But when you look at the statistics around their lives, access to housing, access to good health, etc., it's as it's varied as ours. The only other point I'd make is I'd rather see recognition first and then discussions on treaty second, because treaties won't have the same legal framework that constitutional recognition will have in the Constitution. It will mean that governments will have to be very mindful of what is in the Constitution as opposed to what is in a treaty when they're considering legislation or reforms. But equally, any of our people who seeks to enter into discussions and negotiations with state and territory governments on treaty issues, I don't see that as a problem, because the Noongar land deal that has happened with the Barnett government is an agreement, and it's very much like what you'd expect within a treaty framework.
Mm. I've got one more question, and it's really good to, you know, obviously have this in-depth conversation with you. And would you support the Change the Date campaign for January 26?
It's something that I've thought about. If we're really serious, and I've said this before, the 26th of January is the day that New South Wales was settled, but it was eventually resulted in a move to have it recognised as the National Day of Australia. And I've said in the past, you would expect when we became a nation that that would be Australia Day, but at the moment we've been traditionally Australia Day, so I've tended to support it.
I think people feel like they're sort of banging their head up against a brick wall when they are calling for a change. I mean, I remember I interviewed Dr. Loa Jo O'Donoghue 20 years ago when she was working in through Parliament to try and have it changed, and they gave the sorry day. Many First Nations people are calling for a change.
Sometimes there are days of recognition that are established not in consideration of Indigenous Australians, but are established and become a framework of which the cultural heritage of a country becomes the fabric of that day. And I think that has been entrenched. And people, contemporary Australians, if you had a talk with them, and I know the ones I've talked to, appreciate what we say collectively as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but equally have said, we want a day that we celebrate Australia. And in a sense, it is about what they have come to recognise as the day that Australia celebrates its nationhood as a country. Although many concede that Federation Day should have been the day, because that's when we became officially Australia. It's time to look at directions that we take for the future.